Imagine a world where high-paying jobs that require a university education are abundant. All you got to do is go to college, get decent grades, and pass. For many years, this is what many policymakers have promised, and lots of books and reports from education reformers and thought leaders tell us that the jobs of the future are coming, promising exciting new possibilities for college graduates. But according to the author of a new book, this is a fantasy economy. The real economy, he says, is filled with lower-paying service jobs that don't require college degrees that often leave people in or near poverty. This is a political problem, he says, a problem for employers and corporations to solve as well. But instead, he says, the American education system gets blamed again and again. How did we get here? He says it's the result of a long-running political messaging campaign. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Does that story sound familiar to you? Did you get a good college education only to find that opportunities for stable employment weren't what you had hoped for? If you didn't pursue higher education, what have your job prospects looked like? What do you think should be done to create a better economy for the workforce at all levels? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Neil Krause is a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls, where he teaches courses in American politics and public policy. His newest book is The Fantasy Economy, Neoliberalism, Inequality in the Education Reform Movement. Neil, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks very much for having me.
I want to start by digging into this concept of the fantasy economy, and it seems like there's two major parts of it. First of all, the jobs of the future, the need for highly trained, highly skilled, highly educated people. It's been a commonplace, this idea that we have a skills gap and undertrained workforce. You look a lot at employment and labor statistics. What do you find the reality looks more like?
Well, the reality looks more like a labor market that today is still dominated by jobs that typically require a high school degree or less. This is according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So about 60% of jobs today still only require that level of education. And those numbers have changed a little bit over time. But, you know, as I talk about in the book, this notion that that there was a skills gap, that the labor market was upskilling, this really first emerged in the 1980s. And we're still hearing this language. And it really hasn't happened 30, 35 years later. We're still waiting on that. And that's why I call the book The Fantasy Economy, because it's really a distortion of what we see and experience every single day.
But that idea leads to another key part of the concept of the fantasy economy, as you describe it, the idea that we are going to boost our economy. We're going to lift more people out of poverty by educating them more and educating them in those skills that are hypothetically needed in the job market. Can you talk about what the core of your book, I think. Can you talk about what that's looked like over the decades in practice?
Well, in practice, I mean, most of the story that I tell starts in the 1980s, although the origins go back, you know, several decades before that. But really beginning in the 80s, we heard this message that the K-12 schools were failing. That this is a time, of course, of massive deindustrialization. So industrial jobs are going away. There's an assault on organized labor. And, you know, what business does and what policymakers do and is kind of shift the debate. Rather than talking about what's happening in the economy, very real patterns about jobs being sent overseas and about, you know, unions under fire and a minimum wage that is stagnant and so forth. Rather than talking about that, you know, they very, very clearly, very explicitly shifted the discussion at that time to the K-12 education system. And so we had all these reports in the 80s that the Reagan administration funded and authored, basically saying that the schools were to blame, that our, you know, economic dislocations, that the loss of industry, that the auto industry and others, that there weren't enough skilled workers, and that's why industry was going overseas. But you know, the problem is that, you know, what they started to argue was that the new economy that was going to come in was going to have all of these sort of high education, high skill, high wage jobs, and so it was up to the education system basically to prepare students
for all these jobs that are imminent. I mean, the Reagan administration issued a very famous report in 1987 called Workforce 2000, right? So by the year 2000, there were going to be all these high skill, high education, high wage jobs out there. But that never really happened. I mean, that still hasn't happened. And so the paradigm of, you know, basically blaming the schools for economic inequality and stagnant wages, that's what stuck. Because the message, you know, and I grew up in the 1980s, the message that the schools were failing was absolutely everywhere, absolutely everywhere. It was on, you know, network news and cable news and news magazines and local news and newspapers. It was just absolutely everywhere. It was taken as a given that the schools were the problem, and that's why industry left the country. That's why wages were flat and all the rest of it. You know, and then a few decades later, right, the problem became us. The problem became higher education. So now most of the reform efforts and criticism that we're hearing is directed at the higher education system. But really, and the bottom line of the book is that, you know, we can educate as many people as we want. We could give everyone in Wisconsin a bachelor's degree, right? We could send every low-income student to college. But at the end of the day, that can't change the labor market. It's not going to change the number of warehouses that are built, or jobs in retail, or home health care, or food services, or these are the jobs that dominate our economy. We're just going to have a lot of very well-educated workers in those fields, right? They will be, understandably, they will be upset. They will have borrowed a lot of money to get there, almost all of them. And because we made a promise that basically we couldn't fulfill. Education can't somehow magically, you know, change the labor market. That's not how things work. And really, that's I think why, and we see this right now in the UW system. That's why we're constantly on defense, right? We're always having to defend this because we've been made responsible for something, people's livelihoods, that we can't control.
Talking to Neil Krause from UW River Falls. His new book is The Fantasy Economy, Neoliberalism, Inequality, and the Education Reform Movement. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Neil, a big part of your book is looking at this education reform movement. These ideas you're talking about, the fantasy economy, you say didn't just emerge, you know, organically on its own. There was a major movement led in many cases by large corporate funded foundations. Tell a little bit about that story.
Yeah, I mean, really starting in the 70s and then definitely in the 80s, I mean, capitalism changed. It was sort of a new version of capitalism. It was a version that was really about shareholders and owners only. It was about, you know, the economic interests of shareholders and owners, and not about employees and communities and the public. And that whole, you know, that whole agenda was not, you know, looking back, was not going to be popular. You know, to say in 1980, as popular as Ronald Reagan was, he wasn't going to go to Michigan or Wisconsin and say, you know, here's what's going to happen. We're going to basically get rid of unions in the private sector. Your jobs will be shipped overseas. We're going to more or less freeze the minimum wage for years and years at a time. We're going to roll back the social welfare state. We're going to attack, you know, government, and free markets are going to save us. I mean, that's not really going to work very well in the 1980s. It's not going to work very well today. So they sort of shifted the debate to make it about education. And that's where foundations and business interests really start. And think tanks just churning out just reams of reports that are repeated in news outlets just continually right up to the present day. And basically they all sort of say versions of the same thing, that there's not enough skilled workers. And, you know, today the all the heat is on higher ed, and higher ed needs to be reformed because, you know, there's a skills gap and there's not enough qualified workers out there. So there's just lots and lots of business interests and foundations and think tanks and consultants that it's like a vocabulary that's just repeated endlessly. And it appears everywhere. And then once it appears everywhere, the notion that there's a skills gap becomes sort of a given. But when you look at the actual data, the population has been overeducated for the job market for several decades. So there's really not a skills gap at all.
Another key theme, in some cases coming from the same think tanks and foundations you were talking about, was, like you said, in the 80s, the perception that schools today are less good than they were X number of years ago, which seems to be a recurring message no matter which decade you look at.
Yeah, for sure. When people talk about that sort of thing, they really don't look at the historical context at all. By all standard measures, we are the best educated we have ever been in American history. I mean, educational attainment rates today are the highest they've ever been. 90-91% of people who are 25 and up have a high school degree or equivalent, GED at least, bachelor's degree holders and master's degree holders. People tend to forget in this debate that 50 years ago, half the population dropped out of high school and very few people got, bachelor's degrees and so forth. So it was a very different sample of people going to college in the 1940s and 50s. Today, much more people graduate from high school, many more people go on to college. And for obvious reasons, because the population lives in the real economy. They know their options are really limited unless they get a 2-year degree or 4-year degree or more. The notion that the education system has declined, if you look at it historically, just doesn't hold much water at all.
Talking to Neil Kraus, professor of political science at UW River Falls. His new book is called The Fantasy Economy, Neoliberalism, Inequality, and the Education Reform Movement. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts on what you're hearing from our guest? What do you think of our education system in the United States here in Wisconsin? Do you think there's too much attention to job training at various levels of school, high school, say, or college? Or do you want to see more of that? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up the conversation with UW River Falls political science professor Neil Kraus about his new book, The Fantasy Economy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a K-12 or college educator? What do you wish policymakers knew about working in education? How would you like to see the U.S. government, Wisconsin's government, tackle poverty? Is the answer more education or is it something else? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring out a caller now. Jack is with us in Milwaukee. Jack, hello.
Hello. Yeah, the question I'd kind of like to bring up with you is that in comparison, say, to Germany, where they've had basically a democratic socialistic government for many decades, have they had a different experience as to the demand for highly educated and professionals in their economy?
Jack, thanks for the call. Neil, in your book, I don't think you did a lot of compare and contrast with other countries, but do you have thoughts on Jack's point?
I didn't in the book. I don't know much about the German economy. What I would say off the top of my head is, as a Western economy, I don't think it's, my hunch would be it's not that much different than, the U.S. economy in terms of the labor market. But I can't speak to that with any, with any expertise.
Jack, thanks for the call. Jill joins us now in Solon Springs. Jill, hello.
Hi, good afternoon. I had a specific question about the money and the financing. You talk about the Reagan administration and all the think tanks and kind of the genesis in the 80s. What's happening right now? Why are there legislative bodies allowing this to happen?
Jill, thanks for the call. Neil?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what legislators could do. I mean, foundations and think tanks put out reports all the time, and you know they have a First Amendment right to do that. I don't think that they could or should be limited in that regard. I think that rather, I think it's incumbent upon educators and journalists and scholars to, you know, to look at who is paying for this report and do they have any interests in the way this whole issue is set up here, the way the whole issue is framed, or more concretely, do they have any immediate business interests, you know, at all that would benefit from this report? So, you know, I don't think that we could or should limit what's out there. I think rather that a lot of us have to look much more critically at the reports and especially the data, especially the numbers that are being, you know, presented routinely and often just become, you know, become true just because they're repeated enough times when in reality, when you look at what the labor market actually is, those numbers, in fact, are quite misleading.
Jill, thanks for the call. Andrew is with us now in Janesville. Andrew, hello.
Yeah, hi. I guess I just want to take issue with one of your experts' points that just because more people or more kids are receiving degrees, graduating high school, that somehow indicates the education system has improved. I don't think that these kids who are receiving these degrees are getting as high a quality of education as the kids who did receive degrees years ago. And I think there are a lot of, yeah, I don't have them in front of me, but I have read studies in the past that show that kids' knowledge of civics in particular is just dismal. And, you know, I'm speaking from the perspective of an educator, too. Their attention spans are just absolutely gone. I can't fathom how they're getting a better education.
Andrew, thanks for the call. You mentioned a few of the criteria for measuring that, Neil. You also talk about more students are taking higher level courses at earlier ages. Kindergarten now looks like first grade used to. Are there other qualifiers? But what do you think of Andrew's argument that there have been some declines?
No, I think, and what you said, Rob, I was going to mention that you know, there's been a increasing academic
emphasis on the lower grades in school for many, many years, and also in middle school and high school, you know, advanced math and things like that. But at the same time, I think that, you know, it is the case that, you know, areas like civics, especially since No Child Left Behind, social studies, history, the arts, all these things have been on the chopping block in districts across the country. Why? Because of an incessant sort of campaign to engage in standardized tests and test preparation and really math and reading and then science on top of that. But everything else often falls by the wayside. So I think there's something to be said for that. That has to do, I would argue, with the narrowing of the curriculum than it has to do with any sort of watering down of standards or anything like that.
Andrew, thanks for the call. We're talking to Neil Krause about his new book, The Fantasy Economy. Dan joins us now in Appleton. Dan, hi.
Oh, hello. I was, you know, the author was, how do you address this circular problem that you, if you don't have an economy to support high-tech or higher educated jobs, there's not as many of them, or even though they constantly say that they need more high-skilled workers, at the same time, so you go to get an education because you want to make money, you know, you have to make enough money to survive. Yet you need all these other people or lots of people to fill lots of the non-high-skilled positions.
I gotcha. Yet, Dan, your connection is not great, but I think we get the gist. Dan, getting at one of the central arguments, paradoxes of your book, people get that education to get better pay, and then they join a pool of people that isn't necessarily finding that that's true.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is the case. And I, you know, I stipulate and agree 100% that if you have a four-year degree, if you have an advanced degree, on average, you have a higher wage than somebody with less formal education. The question becomes, in the aggregate, is sending more and more people to get a four-year degree, is that going to somehow magically transform the labor market and turn warehouses into high-tech centers employing a bunch of engineers and and you know, software designers? The answer is no. I mean, it can't do that. Our society is built largely on consumption, and most of what we consume is stuff, objects. It's not information. It's not data. And you know, most of the stuff that we consume is not produced in this country anymore. So it's absolutely true on the individual level that the benefits of higher ed are there on average. But in the aggregate, as a policy, we've seen what happens when we, you know, more and more people get higher levels of attainment. It's correlated with increasing inequality and stagnant wages for a pretty significant majority of people. So
thanks for that call. And Neil, just in our last minute, if the focus isn't on educating people into skills, give us a hint. Where do you think we should be looking for solutions to that economic inequality you just mentioned?
Well, I mean, I think that, and this is what I argue in the book, I think we have to revisit what is called neoliberalism, excuse me, in its entirety. I mean, we've done this experiment for 40 years with, you know, this assault on organized labor and with the outsourcing of jobs and with, you know, sort of the erosion of antitrust. And so corporations merge with other huge corporations, and that ultimately isn't good for workers. You know, the minimum wage should be raised with inflation. Business culture, and the notion that a shareholder, you know, business culture has been good for anybody but shareholders doesn't seem to be the case. So I think that, you know, education should be responsible for and is responsible for educating citizens in a democracy. And sure, a lot of folks are going to go to school and go to college because they want a particular job. But at the end of the day, the discussion of economic opportunity and wages and all the rest of it has to be on employers and policymakers, because they're the ones that really are responsible for the jobs that exist and the wages that are paid.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Neil Krause, professor of political science at UW River Falls. We've been talking about his new book, The Fantasy Economy.